Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Tom Boley back on the show. Tom doesn't really need much of an introduction. He is one of the biggest personalities in the fishing industry here in the Midwest with his YouTube channel. We're just getting caught up on this one. Just a quick, fun catch-up and just all things going on in his world. So let's get to it here. Tom Boley on the JMO Podcast. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area
with over 40 years of combined experience.
They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. You know, if you just want to go for the next 30 minutes, giving me the down and dirties of what's been going on for you this year and what some of the memorable experiences have been for you, go ahead, man.
Yeah, this winter, unlike previous one, we obviously got good ice a lot of places, yeah, which is a nice change after the last one. I feel like it started out pretty quick. We had a pretty quick, obviously, cool down where all of a sudden there was a lot of ice everywhere. Especially by that like second week of December time frame. And that was obviously nice to be able to get machines kind of a lot of places we want to go and stuff like that. And started out fishing a lot of stuff in northern Minnesota. We were on Winnebagoche, Leech, Mille Lacs, made it out to Devil's Lake area a couple times. Those trips, always my favorite trips, like a lot of people are, before everybody's out there with plowed roads and everything like that. And if I can just get on a snowmobile and fly around and see minimal people and fish 20 different spots in a day, I'm a happy guy. That time of year, as long as you got good ice, which we did this year, was pretty good for it. And since then, last year we had just terrible ice around like the northern Wisconsin area. I didn't walleye fish more than maybe one time, like within an hour of my house last year, just because the ice was so inconsistent. And the last kind of couple of weeks here, it's been nice to actually fish around home for a little bit. Now we're packing to get ready for some Great Lakes fishing here over the next couple of days with all the big, massive cold front that we just went through. But overall, fishing's been pretty good, I would say. I've seen some weird patterns all over the place. Like Mille Lacs is one that I spend a ton of time on. And that lake, for whatever reason, this year, it's just so bait fish loaded, which is awesome for the fishery, that it's made, you know, the fishing tough. And it's crazy how you see one lake go through a change and then the other lake goes, you know, that's an hour away, goes the other way. And Mille Lacs is always an interesting one because I've spent so much time out there ice fishing. And lake's absolutely loaded with walleyes. And I think someone could go there and not even realize that, you know, catch two fish or something like that. And it's crazy how a lake can be so filled with bait and walleyes can get so finicky because the lake's so loaded with bait. Good for the fishery, not seeing the same numbers we were previous years. Then you get to a lake like Winnebagoche, for example, which we spent a bunch of time on this winter, and we'd get out there and we'd catch every walleye that you marked. You know, it's kind of at prime time in that mid-December time frame, but it's just crazy how lake to lake, you know, you see different patterns kind of as you go on.
Yeah, dude. And the patterns is kind of, I mean, we're far enough into the season now where I kind of like talking patterns. Like, that's usually the gist of a lot of my fishing conversations, just because, you know, we have like legit midwinter happening. Thick, heavy ice. We've got a little bit of snow cover in places. You know, that affects the environment that these fish are living in. And so we've got that legit midwinter. I guess what would be sort of some of your comments on that, you know, with some of the water that you're fishing with the patterns?
Yeah, one thing we always knew that, like, sound spooked fish, right? Like driving a truck around, drilling a bunch of holes, driving a snowmobile up, whatever, stuff like that. And this year, it's like we didn't have a lot of snow for a lot of the first half of the winter. Some places still don't have any snow, and other places, you know, got those rock hard drifts that are seemingly everywhere else right now. And how much noise was on that ice? And obviously early ice, we fish a lot of generally shallower water, like less than 20 feet for sure. A lot of places we go. And it was just, I played around a lot more this year with, like, normally I'm a madman with an auger in my hand. I like drilling just a million holes. And this year, you know, you sit there on the back of a snowmobile jigging for long enough, and obviously you just start thinking everything fishing. And, I tried doing a lot more this year. I'd pull up to like exactly where I wanted to be, and I'd drill one hole, and I'd just sit there jigging with a forward facing the Hummingbird Mega Live down, and I just started looking around. And it was really interesting to see, like, as time would go on, how, like, all of a sudden my fish would filter back to me. Where, like, before I'd just grid out a big area, run through it in 30 minutes, and then be like, well, there's only one here, you know, when I might have pushed 100 off the spot, and then they never came back in the 30 minutes I was there. And that's one thing I learned that really got drilled into my head this year, as I started fishing a lot more and kind of trying to do that a lot. And noise on the ice, obviously huge. It can be a lot of times, obviously, I'm sure, you know, a lot of people have seen it, but you're sitting there in the shack and there's no snow on the ice, and, you know, your feet are on that crunchy frozen ice that's all slushed up from the holes, and you're jigging a fish in 10 feet of water, and you, like, move your feet and the fish spooks away. So putting a big emphasis on just being really quiet, I feel like it's caught me more fish this year. I've also tried doing a lot more, like, really shallow water stuff. We've always kind of been a firm believer that there's a population of fish that live crazy shallow under the ice. And you see them a lot in the fall, you know, they're really shallow, and you're like, man, you know, can you really get them in 2 feet of water and, you know, in the middle of January? And then we started trying a lot more of that stuff and having success doing it. So it's just kind of a being quiet on the ice. It's kind of one thing I noticed, drilling holes and then just being very still and just kind of peering around at the forward facing sonar and then seeing what comes back to you. So I've tried a lot more, not just to burn through all my spots in a day in the first 2 hours and spend 30, 45 minutes on a spot and see what comes back into me after I'm drilling all those holes and driving a snowmobile up, especially on that bare ice.
When you were mentioning, like, you feel confident that there's a population of fish shallow, what does that look like for you, man, when you're trying to be stealthy, fishing shallow water, midwinter fish? Like, just so curious what your method so far has been when you're attacking those shallow fish like that. And it's essentially a new adventure, right? It's like, you know, so you're kind of going into the unknown to some extent.
Yeah. Ice fishing for me is filled with failure. It just never makes the video. I feel way more ice fishing than I do in a boat. Obviously, fishing in a boat is just way simpler. So the one thing I can't stand, even though they're the funnest bites, are those flash bites, the evening, you know, the 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock bite window. Because it's so much pressure on you to make sure that you're on fish for that thing, that when you don't hit the home run swing, you know, you're sitting there at 6 o'clock going, oh, son of a gun, you know, yeah. I caught one fish tonight or no fish tonight or whatever. But those shallow fish, I never tried fishing them a lot before. I mean, I always tried fishing, you know, the 9 foot outside weed edge or things like that. Especially up here in like Wisconsin, northern Minnesota, some of these lakes were, you know, the water is gin clear. I mean, you could see straight to the bottom in 10, 12 feet in a lot of these lakes. And it just always seemed out of place for fish to be in like 3, 4, 5 feet of water. You didn't really like put a lot of, you know, a lot of weight in that theory that was going to be a good spot to fish. And one thing we actually learned, which is totally the opposite of what I always thought, I always would run around like deep rock humps, deep rock to sand transitions all day, like throughout the middle of the day, and pick off the few, you know, biters we could get in these lakes. One thing I actually learned is that the fish in the shallow water are almost are more active in the middle of the day in 2 to 4 feet of water. And they're harder to get on because they're so spooky, and you push them out just by driving a sled over them or drilling a hole, and you got to wait for them to come back. But one of the main places we fish is inside weeds, inside weed edges with like a hard bottom spot on it. So like you might have a big giant wee flat and then like a really hard sand corner that comes out into it. And it might go from like 4 to 7 quick. And then the weeds will start at like 6 or 7. And we'll set the shack up and then run set lines right on that, you know, on the bare sand butted up next to the weeds. And anytime I can get like a hard bottom bald spot inside of a weed bed, that's always like the spot. And then it's just a matter of like, how quickly can you figure out which ones have fish and which ones don't? Sometimes it takes a couple hours of sitting on a spot for it to realize like how many fish are there, or if it just, the spot sucks. And then obviously once you get on them, the fish generally bite really good late in the day, towards that, you know, evening and then into the nighttime bite. But been very surprised by how good those fish bite in shallow water in the middle of the day, especially if there's weeds there. And a lot of times we're like fishing so shallow where the leader is still in the spool of like the tip up. If you're setting set lines or you're jigging and you look down, you know, and you can see, you can count 3 perch around your bait, see your spoon clear as day, you know, and you pick your rod up 2 feet and the swivel for your leader on your jig rods out of the hole. And then you catch walleyes in there and you're like, wow, this is different, you know?
Yeah. And it's fun. And usually, even if that's like a really popular lake or like a community lake, those are not community spots.
Yeah. You see more pan fishermen there than, walleye guys a lot of times fishing those kind of spots. And I think, you know, a lot of times people probably think that's what we're fishing for in there, that or pike or stuff like that. But that was a big eye opener for me this year. I wanted to try doing more of that, and I did a lot more of it this year, fishing really shallow, and was surprised by how many fish were there and how active they were in the middle of the day. Obviously a lot of failure goes into fishing that way, but because the fish just get so spooky, and you know, if you're sitting in a 30-foot rock hunk, you might be able to graph 4 fish at one time, like on live in a down view or something. When those fish get real schooly, shallow water, you're dealing with single roamers. Normally they're going to be bigger, but they're single roamers for sure.
Another one, like this time of year, you know, set lines, tip ups, or, you know, remote lines is always a big conversation. We could all say that, you know, those tip ups, or just a dead stick presentation, even if it's right next to you, can sometimes, you know, just completely make the day for you. Maybe that's just what they want. How often do you feel like, you know, in this shallow situation where stealth is totally, you know, a big part of your consciousness, like it's on the front of your mind, like how often do you give the tip ups or those set lines the spot, like the cheese, like, and then maybe if you're going to jig in a hole, you know, because I think, you know, instinctually we would all set up our shack like on the juice and we would jig that. Mm-hmm. And the set lines would be sort of wherever we also want to cover, like the spots or whatever. But, you know, like when we start talking about this and getting real nuancey about it, I feel like we got to pay a little bit of homage to those set lines. I was just kind of curious if you sort of had any, you know, in-depth thoughts on that.
Yeah. Wisconsin, for whatever reason, a lot of like deep clear lakes right around the area that I kind of grew up fishing and fish the most still, it's probably one of the hardest areas to like catch fish jigging for whatever reason. I don't know exactly why that is. I don't know if they just like feeding on really big stuff. The other thing I think you have happen is there's so much bait. There's so much more bait than there are fish in the lake, where they just have so many options to eat stuff. And I always used to think like, oh, you gotta, you know, they want to bite a big minnow on a tip up at dark, or they want to go out over the basin and eat this big thing. And then they just kind of sit in the weeds. And, you know, the best thing I can do is try to feed them something small and like, you know, real compact and finessey. And one thing I've learned is that you kind of got to go the other way. A lot of times, like I fish a lot of big flashy spoons and crank it really hard up over the top of the weeds and get those fish to make a reaction like that. But there's tough to outfish a big sucker minnow or a big shiner on a tip up, especially in January, you know, in the Midwest. And the one thing I think that I've tried to do over the years is not, I think a lot of people have this idea, like in Wisconsin, you get 3 lines, I think, you know, North Dakota 4 or whatever. But they would never jig in one hole, watching the tip up go up all day, 30 yards away and catch fish, and then never move their jig rod, right? They never would not go jig over by where that tip up's always going up. And the same thing goes the other way around. You know, if I try to treat the set lines like a jig rod, where like if it doesn't go up in an hour, I'll move it. Sometimes it's just going like 10 feet the other way. We've been fishing so much weeds, and one thing you notice in walleyes and weeds, if you set right down on top of a 8-foot tall weed clump and you put in that bait like 3 feet under the ice above the weeds, tough to catch a walleye that way a lot of times. If you're on a bald spot next to the thick clump of weeds, high likelihood of being around a walleye. So a lot of times, especially fishing weeds, like it could be a change of moving the tip up 5 feet to the left or 10 feet to the right or stuff like that. So if I know I'm on fish and I have lines that are just not catching fish, or if I'm jigging a spot where I'm just not seeing fish on sonar, I'm more than happy to like shuffle around 10 feet, 20 feet, 75 yards or whatever it might be to try to make all my lines fish better. Because if there's one thing that's sure about midwinter in January is you pretty much got to work for every bite you get on a lot of these lakes this time of year.
Yeah, and setting your expectation, I feel like that's one thing that I do appreciate about, you know, you, your content. Three nice walleyes in one evening is solid, you know, in a lot of places, you know, and there might be some guys from wherever else, you know, that would turn their nose up or be snobby about that. But the reality is, you know, yeah, you're talking about a lot, you're fishing a lot of lakes that just like the stocking reports probably don't necessarily jump off the page. These are lakes that are in proximity to you. You're fishing them because, you know, just because of that geographically, they're around you, you know, something about them, you know, there's walleyes in there, but they're probably not even the primary, you know, predator species living in there, you know? And I think a lot of people can relate to that. And so setting your expectations is obviously a huge part.
Yeah.
Knowing what you're trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's one of my cameraman hates it because I like doing a lot of these, like the chess match of fishing, like really low numbers, bodies of water. And I have a soft spot for those dark gold sided black back, you know, Northern Wisconsin walleyes. They're like the prettiest fish in the world to me. But yeah, the realistic part is that, you know, these lakes a lot of times have a density of one adult fish per acre and they might be 1,100 acres. So you're dealing with, you know, pretty low amount of fish in a body of water. And ice fishing where you're stuck to fishing through an 8-inch hole, there's plenty of days I go out and, you know, I don't see any fish in the power hour. And I'm like, oh, I'm giving it till 5. And I get one right as I'm picking up. I'm like, well, that wasn't it tonight, you know, back to something different tomorrow. And a lot of times a good night is just that, you know, you're catching 4, 5, you know, but I still get excited about filming those videos where it's like, man, if we can get 4 bites tonight and make them count, a couple of those fish, maybe 23, 24, 25 inches, like that's an awesome night. And I get just excited about making those videos because you know what the expectations are. As I do go into somewhere else, like we're going to a place this week, if I don't catch, you know, 15 in the middle of the day, I'm going to be upset. So I get just excited about catching 3 at my little home lakes as I do catching, you know, 10, 15 big ones somewhere else. So, yeah.
Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast.
Oh, yeah, they definitely count for more. I think a lot of people relate to that. And definitely in some of those scenarios, one good bite counts as 10. I mean, when it finally happens and it's like you get that 26-incher and you put the real work into actually, yeah, that could make your whole winter, man. I mean, I don't want to like overstate that, but that's reality. Like when I grew up,
oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, if that would have happened to me once a winter. But no, man, I can definitely appreciate
it. Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, I always look back on like a winter, the open water season or whatever. And a lot of times, you know, you think of like, man, wasn't that a cool catch? And very rarely is it like someday you just went out and like everything went to plan. You landed on fish, you caught a whole bunch. Most of the time it's like something went wrong. It wasn't going good. You thought there was fish there. Then you got a cool bite, you know, or something like that. Or you, the day that you actually learned something that you didn't know before. Those are always the fisher. It's like, you know, a whole fish can start a whole different way in which you like to fish, or a whole different system you have to fish in a spot or things like that. So that's the cool part about fishing, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. But I like that you kind of, you know, you definitely honor those set lines. You're moving them if they're not producing. You're giving them you're giving that minnow every chance to get bit you possibly can. I think those are the details in a conversation like this that people ought to pick up on. If you were jigging that hole for that long and didn't get a bite, you'd move. You know, why wouldn't you do that? You know, I think that if people started to really be honest with themselves and work hard with those little fine details, you know, I think that there's something to that.
Yeah. One thing I always say, especially whenever I do seminars or anything like that, it's you never would go out on the lake in the summer, anchor your boat, make the same cast all day, and then not catch anything and be like, well, that was slow, and drive back to the boat landing 8 hours later. You know, you never would fish that way. So as much, I mean, obviously ice fishing, you're always limited by, you know, just fishing through a hole, but you got to try to maximize the mobility as much as possible to either move stuff up and down a spot, you know, pull stuff shallower, pull stuff deeper, keep stuff on the edge. And as much as, you know, forward facing sonar is like everything right now, that's all everybody talks about is like, oh, I, you know, watched the fish bite, I saw the walleyes. The one thing I see, number one thing I use it for in the winter, outside of just, you know, watching the fish come up and bite my bait when they get underneath me, is positioning myself like exactly where I want. And it's so much easier than it used to be to get on weed edge and inside weed edge, say like, oh, where's a bald spot in this weed bed? I can go park my shack and jig fish all day. I'm using it a lot for that. And that is a massive game changer for setting set lines for us. And I don't know how, you know, obviously people are using it and doing it, but I think that's one big overlooked thing that, you know, a lot of guys aren't doing with it yet. That is so simple that makes the day 100 times better.
Let's spend a little bit of time talking about some of your projects and some of your businesses. I know, you know, we always make mention, we always promote your stuff, but, you know, you've got a lot of content out there now, and, you know, maybe it might be worth spending some time actually kind of talking about some stuff you got going on. You know, the Walleye Now app, what's the update on all your offerings there, and what, you know, just what's the kind of the totality of what you've built up so far?
Yeah, it's always a lot of stuff going in a lot of different directions on the media front for us. Obviously, pour a ton of work into just getting the YouTube videos, pour a ton of work into doing Walleye Now stuff. We're always kind of backlogging videos on there. I couldn't even honestly tell you how many videos are on there now. It's got to be getting close to like 350, 360 videos, but shot a whole bunch this winter. One thing we try not to do is we don't try to go out searching for stuff to film for. Walleye Now, we like to like let the stuff come to us. So I do so much travel where, you know, and something's different every time you go out. You know, we go to some lakes 7-8 times over a winter, and same thing the year before. And you're like, why is this like this year? Why are we doing this in this location that's some reason working when it didn't last year? And then we film a video on it. Anything that we think helps people get on more walleyes is on the app. And obviously for anybody listening, it's Walleye Now available on Google Play and the App Store. And it's almost like a catalog, the library of everything we put on YouTube. It's like highly informational, in-depth videos, backing up the locations, the presentations, little tips doing this, tips doing that. And it's kind of what it's all about there. But we try not to chase too much content down, because anytime you go out and you try to make a video doing a specific thing, it gets too fabricated. So the reason we called it Walleye Now is because when you're in the moment, you're excited about the fact that all of a sudden you're catching walleyes here and you're passionate about it, and you film a much better product when you film it that way. So that's kind of what we do there. And there's always stuff going on YouTube. There's always stuff going on the Walleye Now app, and it's always a work in progress.
I mean, when you started that thing, you probably had some fear, hopes, and dreams. Do you feel like, you know, you're, I guess you're a couple of years in now, right?
Yeah, it's been interesting. Well, one thing that I always get a kick out of is I'll meet someone somewhere or get a message from them, and they're like, you wouldn't believe it. What's that? And they're like, well, we went fishing and we were, you know, typed in the lake that we like to fish on the app, saw the video, went to a spot that looked like that, set up how you showed us the setup, and we caught fish. You'd never believe it. And it's like, people have like this stuff. We're like, well, of course, you know, we made it to do that. But it's always amazing getting people to connect, like, you know, the technology, you know, there's an app in my phone that can show me exactly what's going on out there and where to set up. And it's funny how, you know, there's like this gap between reality and what's on the internet. And, you know, see, people are always shocked when it's the same thing, the same reality.
Yeah. When you're just trying to be as, you know, authentic and genuine and forthcoming with information as you can to bridge that gap. But I think that's true. I think that, you know, we're still, you know, like in those television days, right? It's like, you know, it's like what happens on TV would never happens in real life. But now, you know, like the digital content or just the way that, you know, just the way of the industry, guys like yourself are really at the tip of the spear, but you just, you make it so relatable that, yeah, there's still a generation out there that's like baffled by that.
Well, as fishermen, we're all stubborn and probably somewhat old school to some extent. And, yeah, I'm no different.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that I've made a living on technology always amazes me. And then, you know, but yeah, fishermen are fishermen.
Yep. And I'd rather watch a fisherman figure out technology than watch a tech guy try to tell me how to fish.
Oh yeah.
So that's, there's a rhyme and a reason for that. You know, you're talking about your cameraman. I heard this one time, Mitch likes to be called Mitch, but you like to call him Mitchell on camera because maybe it's a little bit annoying.
I do a lot of things that have a sole intention of getting a reaction out of him. That's one of the, I think that's one of the many nice things about having a cameraman. Not only do they edit your stuff, but you can take out all your emotional damage out on the day directly at them. So that's probably one of my favorite parts of having a cameraman. He said his mother doesn't even call him Mitchell, so it's got to get under his skin.
So what do you said you got some Great Lakes fishing coming up. Yeah, dude, we've been cold enough. There's probably some ice over there. What's the forecast or what are you kind of scheming for that?
Yeah, so I've been on Lake Superior a decent amount of times over the last couple of weeks. That's probably the shiftiest ice I've ever been on anywhere. You always got to be so careful and check so much ice out there. And but catching some brown trout, some splake, a little bit of everything. Kind of contemplating when we're going to film something up there. I was checking lake trout ice, which unfortunately, you know, they get those big Great Lakes snow effects, and there was like 10, 12 inches dumped the day before, and the ice wasn't anywhere near what I thought it was going to be. So we had one day that was kind of a bust, but hopefully getting to some places like Erie. I know they're catching some fish over there on the ice now. Bay to Knock, hoping to make a trip there. You know, all the places where last year you're kind of wishing like, oh man, you know, there's just no way we're getting to these Great Lakes. So it's nice this year that it looks like, outside of the crazy amount of wind we have right now, that some of these places have a lot of ice fishing potential.
Well, what else? What else is cool in your mind, in your world? Just some fun things that have been happening from this winter. Anything that we could close out on in a couple minutes?
Yeah, I mean, obviously this winter has been way better. I feel like there's actual excitement back in ice fishing this year. I'm sure you guys are seeing that too, where like there's like 2 years where it was just kind of like, you know, the person who's not me or somebody else who makes a living in it was like, oh, you know, we made it out one time and, you know, we just couldn't get the shack out, or, you know, the lake at the cabin wasn't frozen. I've had more people reach out to me this year that were like, I did not think cared about ice fishing at all. Fished in the summer, didn't care about ice fishing in the winter. And I had a message in me like mid-December, like, hey, what kind of shacks, what kind of rod was that you said for this? And I was like, this is got to be good to see. So I hope everybody's getting out and doing a lot more fishing this year with the ice we have. And yeah, I mean, it's obviously hopefully great for the industry and all that good stuff. But I think all of us are feeling a sigh of relief looking at the conditions, and as much as 30 below sucks, it's been good for building ice. I mean, I've seen a lot of ice that's basically doubled from, you know, 12 to 24 inches in the last 2 weeks. It's crazy the enthusiasm curve for ice fishing. It starts out in, you know, end of November with just insane hype around it.
Yeah.
You go through the season, it kind of bell curves and like around Christmas, and then it gets cold and kind of goes down and down and down a little bit. But there's nothing like the enthusiasm of early ice. And there is something about it. I mean, I don't think any of my best days of fishing ever have ever been on the ice, as far as like, you know, between open water and ice. But there is something about reeling a fish through an ice hole that is intoxicating or just never gets old, even if you catch two of them, you know. We rarely film crappie stuff, and we were sitting over I always keep a few crappie videos in my back pocket, because if I have a week where I just bomb on walleyes doing something ridiculous, I can always go film a crappie video. And I'm always like, oh, you know, I'm not that excited to go catch crappies today. And then I go out there and do it, and I see a little Christmas tree under me, and I'm reeling them in. I'm like, all right. It is fun. Yeah. The crappies got me again. You know, I don't know how many crappies we've all caught through the ice, but there's something special about just sitting over a stack of fish and catching them, you know?
Yeah, man, it is super optimistic season, but I like hearing about, you know, just getting the updates and kind of hearing about your grind, on those shallow fish. It's like, you know, I know you're not the kind of guy that tries to reinvent the wheel all the time, but you're always at the tip of the spear trying new things. It's like you find a weird way to balance both of those things. You know, you're not so far out in left field that you're trying things ridiculous. You know, like I say, reinventing the wheel, you know, you're relatable, but at the same time, you're out on some of these pressured community lakes, you know, gin clear water, super spooky fish, and you know, you're drilling holes looking for the gap in the weed bed in 6 feet of water. And it's like, you know, there isn't a walleye fisherman within a quarter mile of you. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff, man. That's the kind of stuff that fires me up.
One thing I always think when it comes to ice fishing, there's very few like groundbreaking ways to go about catching a fish, right? You still got to drop a spoon, a tail bait, a rattle bait, a blade bait down an ice hole with a chunk of meat on it, and jig it and hope a fish bites it, right? So you can't really get all that crazy with some crazy new out of left field idea, but you can always get more efficient with it. That's always the thing, I think. And obviously, in the summer, you're so efficient with how you can process water so fast. And we try to do as much of that in the winter as possible, knowing exactly where we are, making sure we're around fish, making sure our baits are exactly where we want them. I think that, I mean, my friend was asking me this, who just got into ice fishing this year. Like, man, I wish I was really good at ice fishing. I was like, you know, in the open water season, the difference between probably a really talented fisherman and a weekend guy or an average fisherman can be a long ways, just because there's so many different ways to fish. There's so many, you know, locations, blah, 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 blah. Ice fishing, it's 99% just being on the fish. And because you're still putting some kind of live bait down, some kind of jigging presentation down, and hoping a fish bites it. So getting on the fish in the winter is often the hardest part, obviously, because you're so limited in how you can do it. So any way you could be more efficient to get on fish is a lot of times just, I think, the difference between a good day for me and a bad day for me, honestly.
There it is. That's a perfect spot to end on, man. Great message there. And I appreciate the updates. That's it. I'll let you back to it, brother.
All right. Thanks, man. Have a good night.
You too. Later.
See you.